It's here and now, and it's summer. Congress is out on its 4th of July recess, but this time of year, some of the most interesting political news isn't in D.C. anyway. So today we're looking outside the Beltway, first to Texas, where the legislature convened its second session today to take up abortion restrictions. As you've no doubt heard, State Senator Wendy Davis's filibuster of the bill last Tuesday night ran out the clock of that last session, preventing the measure from being passed. The pink sneakers she wore are now a best-selling brand on Amazon. But what happens now? Charlie Mattesian is NPR's digital political editor. Charlie, what can we expect to see in this special session starting today?
Well, for starters, you can expect to see several hundred demonstrators at the Texas Capitol. You had demonstrators arriving this morning for a rally opposing the abortion restrictions bill. And later today, you're going to see supporters of the bill at their own rally. So that's really the start of the process. And keep in mind that the abortion bill isn't really the only issue on the docket for this special session, but obviously it's the noisiest and most contentious. And I think what we're likely to see is that the legislative machinery is going to get cranked up this week, and then the floor votes will probably come sometime after the July 4th holiday.
Yeah, and the bill would, what, remind us, restrict abortions to the first 20 weeks of a pregnancy, restrict doctors that can perform them?
Right, and it's the restrictive nature of the bill, and the claims by many folks who are abortion rights supporters that it would restrict access and close down many of the facilities. That's really at the heart of the debate here.
Okay, so give us some sense of the number of days and what might happen, because we saw the filibuster in the last session went up right through the 30th day. What's to stop Democrats from doing that again?
Well, this isn't a debate that's likely to be resolved in the next few days. I mean, we're talking about a 30-day session here, and the action is likely to happen after the holiday. And I think what you'll see that's going to be different is that you're going to see the mechanics of the legislative machinery are going to be a little bit different this time, because keep in mind what happened in the first special session. The problem was that the Republicans didn't manage the time, the clock, very well, and that's how State Senator Wendy Davis was able to put the filibuster on until the final waning moments of that session, and that's why we're back here for a second session. So that's going to be the big difference, is that you're going to see Republicans manage it a little bit differently. And in the end, though, the real problem that Democrats and Wendy Davis face is that it's a real uphill struggle in a state where Republicans still have solid majorities in the legislature. I mean, after all, this is a measure that's already passed the House and already has the votes to pass in the Senate. So it's a measure that's going to be very hard to stop from passing. And if you listen carefully enough to what Wendy Davis, the state senator who filibustered, and what many Texas Democrats are saying, they are acknowledging the limits of what they're going to, or what they can hope to accomplish.
Plus, I'm not sure anyone else would want to do what she did. You know, once we heard that catheters were involved, this was a painful process of doing this filibuster. But what about Governor Rick Perry, governor for almost 13 years? Where does this position him in that state? Some would say, boy, he takes a risk pushing this through. Some would say he takes a risk by not pushing it through in that state.
Right. I agree. That's a great question. I think if you look at it in purely political terms, this probably has more political upside than risk for Governor Perry. Because, for starters, Texas is still a very conservative state. And this is, after all, a state that voted for Mitt Romney for president by over 1 million votes over Barack Obama. So that is sort of the landscape here. That's the background. And while the governor, in one sense, has energized Texas Democrats and even Democrats nationwide over this restrictive measure, at the same time, he's also energized Texas conservatives. And by reasserting himself into the local and national headlines over abortion, he has burnished his socially conservative credentials. And so that advances his own political interests if he's interested in making a second bid for president in 2016.
Okay, so we're keeping an eye on Texas and what this will all mean. But first, we just want to also touch down in Illinois. Later this week, former Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. will be sentenced for misusing $750,000 in campaign cash. Charlie, take us back. This was a sad tale. You know, it involved Rolex watches and mounted elk heads. Remind us.
Right. I would agree. It's a really sad and troubling story of a former rising political star and the son of civil rights leader Reverend Jesse Jackson. And it's a story of a politician who lost his way and is now facing prison time after pleading guilty to illegally diverting hundreds of thousands of dollars in campaign funds to his own personal use. And as you mentioned, that money went to mounted elk heads. It went to celebrity memorabilia, went to a $43,000 Rolex watch. 43K. Yeah. It's pretty amazing when you think about it. But it's not just the crime itself. The medical and the emotional toll that his life in the public eye took on him and his family is also pretty breathtaking because, as you know, the congressman was missing from the House for months in 2012 as he underwent treatment for severe depression and bipolar disorder.
And so what do you think his legacy will be? And how what are you hearing people in Chicago saying about this messiness coming up at the end of the week?
Well, I think there's probably a couple of legacies here. One is the national legacy, which is going to tarnish his work because, again, it's going to focus light, an unfavorable light on Chicago politics, which is sort of already looked at as sort of a system that's in disrepute, at least in the eyes of many people in terms of thinking of the Chicago machine. But I think in terms of Jesse Jackson Jr.'s legacy, when he resigned from Congress, the Congressional Black Caucus, of which he was a member, lauded the congressman for what it called a rich legacy of services to a Chicago-based district. And what the CBC was referring to was a legacy of service to his Southside Chicago area constituents. And during his time in office, he was a very forceful advocate for the poor, and that gave him a national voice. But he also used his perch as a member of the Appropriations Committee to send billions of dollars, federal dollars, back home to Chicago for things like affordable housing and community centers and infrastructure projects, among other things. And because of that, I think it's often overlooked that his legacy, while it was tarnished nationally, if you take a look back home, he still won re-election pretty convincingly in November with all of this hanging over his head. So back home, I think there's a great deal of sadness, almost possibly even more sadness than anger over this.
Yeah. Well, Charlie Mutesi, we only have a minute, so I'm going to put you in a terrible position and ask you to comment on one national story, what seemed to be a new GOP campaign over the weekend to label potential presidential candidate Hillary Clinton old. Old hat, old news, old.
Yeah, I think you picked the most interesting story, at least from my perspective, over the weekend, because it highlights a couple of things that we're going to see spin out over the next couple of years
just quickly
with regards to 2016, which is, you know, how do you deal with somebody like Hillary Clinton? And I think already you're seeing the Republicans are going to try and lay down a marker of the themes they're going to have to use against her without calling her old, but at the same time highlighting that their field is very young.
We'll see how that plays out. Charlie Mutesi and NPR's digital politics editor. Charlie, thanks as always.
Thank you, Robin.
We'll take a break. Jeremy will be back with a song to start your week here and now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.